Welcome to HWTP Sports Talk with your host, David Weinstein. And now, David Weinstein.
Hello, Huddlin' fans. Thank you for listening to Huddlin' with the Pro Sports Talk with David Weinstein, featuring Pepper Johnson. My co-host Pepper Johnson is a 13-year NFL veteran player, a 5-time Super Bowl champion as a player and coach, a member of the Ohio State Varsity O Hall of Fame, and a former defensive coach for the Bills, Jets, and Patriots. Joining us tonight is Christina St. Louis, a reporter for the Miami Herald. She wrote a very interesting article this past week about Najee Davenport and his class action lawsuit against the NFL. We're also very lucky to have with us as well tonight, Talon Harris, an actor, director, writer, producer, and podcaster. Thanks for joining us. So for those people who didn't get a chance to read Christina's story about Najee Davenport, you can find it on the Miami Herald, wherever you might click on your Miami Herald. But Najee Davenport is a UM alumni here at the U. He was well known for being a pounding running back, and he spent 7 seasons in the NFL playing for the Packers, the Steelers, and the Colts. Unfortunately, like many NFL football players, he was injured during his playing career, suffered a number of concussions, one very serious involving an orbital fracture, and as a result, he became eligible to be part of the class that participated in the settlement with the NFL in their longstanding lawsuit with their players. However, when he went in to make his claim, the NFL decided that he didn't qualify under their standards. You have to meet a certain base level to qualify to get an award, and they do it based on your cognitive recognition and how your brain functions factor in. Interestingly enough, they've shown discrimination between former players who are black and players who are white. They set a standard that they put an intelligence threshold lower for black players, so it's much harder for them to qualify for settlement. So he and some others in that class decided they would bring a lawsuit, and that's what Christina wrote about. Christina, what really struck me as offensive in this day and age is that the big money people like the NFL are still looking to discriminate against people who make up 65 to 70% of their workforce.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that struck out to me as well. And the multiple people that I spoke with about the story said, you know, the NFL created this program for paying off benefits to people who have suffered from brain injuries, concussions, or dementia-like symptoms from their career in the NFL. And the majority of those people are black players. And to have a system in place that makes it so that it's harder for black players to get the money really shows that they're not interested in paying those benefits to the people who make up the majority of the league.
I mean, talent, you know, from my perspective, I'm down here in South Florida. There are a lot of pro football players, former pro football players down here and throughout the rest of the country. And we've seen the debilitating effects it's taken on people who were legends when we watched the game. It just strikes me as, you know, more than just odd, but again, offensive that the NFL would take this position and intentionally try to deny these players their recovery.
It's not, I don't find it super surprising. We have to remember that this, what we're talking about, this fund and being eligible, this came from a lawsuit. This wasn't voluntarily given. It wasn't like the commissioner woke up one morning and said, let's give the hurt players or the players that are suffering some money. This had to be an action taken towards the league. And these are, you know, if you will, you know, what's paid out, you know, so they're applying for something that originally had to be sued to get. So it doesn't shock me that if anybody's paying anything out, class action or either way, you're going to try to negate or keep that to a low minimum. So denying certain players keeps that payout down. You know, this is real. This is real stuff. I mean, one thing that goes beyond race is injury. You know, any type of injured product, or if you get hurt on the job, it's like workman's comp, right? So it does not discriminate. You know, you got a leg, it could get broken. You know, so these people are fighting for what's rightfully theirs, but it had to be brought up from a player side to a lawsuit side to the league. So now this is something they're paying out. They're not, I don't deem them as being super ecstatic about giving these benefits for these players or these ex-players.
No, and it's a shame because it's these ex-players that form the basis for the $1 million that these owners and the NFL are making right now. It's not the players necessarily. They pay them a lot of money now and everybody's in the bright lights, but all those players that in the past decades have suffered and have gone through these injuries and not recognized the issues that go along with concussions that set the stage for all this. Christina, when you wrote your story, did you get a chance to talk to either Najee Davenport or to Kevin Henry, who joined him in the lawsuit?
I did not get a chance to speak with them in time for the article, but I did speak with one of the lawyers representing them on the case, Cy Smith.
You know, I have to think that these guys, and I know they're not because they brought this as a class action as well, they're not the only players who were affected by this. And you know, Talon, as you pointed out, if I'm hurt and my leg is broken, I should get the same recovery that anybody else should get. It shouldn't matter what my skin color was, you know, on top of the bone that was broken in my leg. So for them to say that inherently black players have a lesser intelligence really, you know, offends my conscience. I just don't see, there's no support for what they're claiming. They rely on doctors and lawyers who they've hired, who they've paid money to, who are their experts that say, oh no, this is, you know, reality. They call it race norming, and that's how they're going to balance it off. It again, doesn't take into account the pounding that the body took and the pain that was inflicted on some of these players while they were playing.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, but we also have to look at, and I talk about this time to time, especially during football season, this is one of the leagues with the, you know, professional league with the worst player union, you know. So, again, it goes back to what the powers that be feel about the players. Even though they make up the 65 to 70%, if the league already, you know, as far as union, you know, situations are the worst between baseball and basketball and football and everything, it kind of tells the story ahead of time. This is just another one. I mean, again, how many years ago did the first people come out and say, hey, we think there's a connection here, CTE and all these things that are going on in the league that's worth looking at? And they fought looking at it for a very long time, much less the amount of time they took before they said, okay, well, we see something there. But just the fight to get them to look at it took forever.
And even leading up into the settlement, they were denying that concussions were a problem, that it was really an affliction. You know, it took the movie, it took some pressure, it took people actually coming out and speaking out to get him to recognize. Christina, when you spoke to the lawyer who was behind this, did he describe to you the fact that, you know, he didn't just come up with this out of thin air, that they'd been fighting it at the class action level and within the settlement and had appealed their way up? And that their basis for this was that they had just hit a dead end and they needed to find a way to recover.
Yeah. So one of the things that he mentioned, too, is that, you know, when they came into this system of getting tested by these doctors to try to qualify for this program, for this benefit payment, they did not know that the NFL had put this race norming formula in place. And so even as they're, you know, fighting and going through these lawsuits, the NFL had this system that was kind of a secret to the people who it mattered the most to. And so that's one of the things that Cy Smith also described, is the secrecy of it all.
And it's the secrecy behind it all, you know, when you don't know who's paying the witnesses, when you don't know that's what's being adjusted to it, and then they out and out deny you your recovery, you have to figure, well, you know, maybe that's me. Maybe they're right. Maybe I do have, you know, a lower intelligence to it, but that's not the case. No, not at all. And they sort of force them back into a hole. I think it's a stereotype that a lot of athletes face, you know, coming up through the ranks. I mean, we all have an image of big offensive linemen and defensive linemen. All they do is push bodies around. They're really not that smart. It took a very long time for, you know, people to not discriminate against quarterbacks, against, you know, other players and other positions that had at this point been typified and had typically been a place where there were only white people who played. We're still seeing it today with head coaches. There are very few people of color who are head coaches in the NFL. And so it's something that's just prevalent throughout the entire league, but yet they're the ones who everybody flocks to. They're the ones who, you know, we all sat around our television this past Sunday watching the Super Bowl and, you know, advertisers paying big money for it. There has got to be a way to break the cycle, though, and this lawsuit is certainly pushing the way towards it, but they need to get the word out and they need to show that they are, in fact, being discriminated against. You have a platform out there, their talent, but between your acting and your, you know, appearances and your podcast, any of the people you've talked to have any ideas about how to get the cycle broken and how to get the word out?
I mean, here's the thing, you know, I do one of the podcasts is called The Box Seats, and we talk about this very thing on a daily basis. You know, a lot of times the sports, you know, organizations like the NFL, they look at the numbers, and in this case, brown becomes green. Because you said it in the stats, when you're talking about 65, 70% of this situation, again, this is a payout, this is a lawsuit, and it behooves me as a corporation, because at the end of the day, it's a corporation, that the majority is in my favor of people who I can say do not qualify. You know, if I got this lawsuit, and at the end of the day, I'm able to pull off where I'm only be able to pay out 30%, of 100% people who are affected, I'm winning as a corporation. You know, as a league, it's going to take, unfortunately, several more stories like this, several more cases like this to come together and say, hey, look at my case. It's very similar to your case, and not come in as individuals. That, to me, is the way to high beam a situation. Otherwise, you're dealing with the regular halogen from regular headlights where it gets too many times it gets ignored.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
Christina, how many other players did the lawyer mention to you that he had put together to join this class action? I know that the two players who were named in the lawsuit are the, you know, the primary plaintiffs in the case, but there have got to be more. He's alleged it's a class action, you know, so Kevin Henry and Najee Davenport are the named players. How many others did he say did he have on board?
So he was not able to answer to me exactly how many other players are involved, because as I understand it, though it is a lawsuit brought on behalf of several Black players, some of those players are represented by other legal counsel, so they couldn't go into revealing who those players are, what the exact number is. And one of the things that's particularly striking as well is that these lawyers have gone to the NFL and have asked for basic information that details, you know, how many Black players have applied, how many Black players have been denied access to the benefit, and how many of those were denied, though they originally came in with qualifying scores about their level of cognitive impairment. And the NFL has denied them access to that information.
So just looking at the raw numbers that he put into the complaint that he filed, he says that more than 12,000 members of the settlement class have received the BAP testing, which is this method that uses the race norming. And then several thousand others have received another type of testing. So, you know, you're talking 15,000 players, perhaps, who are going to fall into this class and who, you know, as you calculate the numbers, their talent, if you shave off, you know, a couple million from each of these players, you know, you're talking about a big chunk of change. You're talking, you know, $15, $20 million in rejected plaintiffs in a lawsuit. And it's not like they're getting a little bit of money and they're just not getting the big ticket. Now, both Davenport and Hardy, they were rejected outright. They said, no, you don't qualify. You know, yeah, you had an injury. Yes, you had a concussion. But guess what? Because of this race norming, you know, your intelligence wasn't high enough to begin with. So you're not going to get any money from us. And a guy who's now played 7 years in the NFL, and was, you know, looking to, you know, be able to at least live somewhat comfortably based on what his salary was, is now walking away with nothing. You know, hopefully he's still going to get the health care that he was promised as being part of the union. But it again comes back to the numbers. It's all about the numbers. If, you know, 12, 15,000 members of the class are not there, how many more down the road are going to suffer from the same fate as these guys?
That's absolutely right. And David, I think we're looking at, for lack of a better term, a class action forming within a class action. That's crazy. I mean, you already got a class action here. You know, the powers that be says, yes, you're liable and this is what you must do. Then you create a guideline. You go in return and create a guideline that negates, you know, more than half the percentile of that that you don't have to deal with, whether that be beneficial or financial or whatever the case may be. And those people, again, to me, that's the high beam. That's how you high beam this thing and put it on Front Street, is now you get that group together and create a class action within the class action, you know. And I think these slaps on the wrist of these leagues and these commissions, you know, kind of helps them or forces them, if you will, to do better on the next thing, you know, going forward. Because no one likes these class actions. No one likes these big payouts and being wronged, if you will, especially in the court of public opinion when you need the public to support your business.
And I'll throw this out to both of you. Have you really seen any decrease in the court of public opinion? It seems that no matter what they do, no matter how they mistreat their players, no matter what it is, everybody just keeps flocking back. Even pre-pandemic, even before we were all stuck in our homes and, you know, didn't have any sports to look at, people would forget about all the deficiencies in the NFL, the way that they mistreated people, the same for Major League Baseball, NBA, when the owners, you know, didn't understand, when players were protesting, when they were standing up for their rights. We saw the players almost crumble the entire NBA during the playoffs, during the quarantine. But yet, as we sit here right now, all anybody cares about is what's the box score, what's the end result at the end of the game. Everybody seems to forget about it. Is it because our fandom pushes us so far forward to be fans, or do we just not really care about the people that we're watching out there putting their bodies on the line every day?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think the culture has everything to do with everything. I think that we're a people that only feel as empathetic or sympathetic as the victim. So I think that once the victim starts to conform and that hype, if you will, dies down and they look like they're accepting a settlement or they're back to the norm, I think the court of public opinion goes the same way. They're like, oh, he's okay. So then you forget and you keep it moving. That's why I go back to what I said with the strength in numbers, is that you have to get this cluster of folks. I don't care if it's 500 or 5,000. You get this cluster and you guys get together and make a strong move. That's how we got here, by the way. You know, we wouldn't have even gotten here with the whole CTE and the settlement if they didn't stay strong in numbers. Too many times an NFL player speaks out or feels a certain way or slighted or, you know, prejudiced against or whatever. And 2 weeks into that fight, it seems to dissipate. They made amends. Basically, somebody cut a check and they made amends. And it goes away. So guess what? The people who were supporting that cause were ready to march down the street with you. They put those signs and march tools away because you said you're okay. When the victims say they're okay, the support kind of dissipates behind
them. Yeah, one of the things that I think is important to remember is that even as people are moving and fighting for justice, social justice in the NFL, whatever that looks like, it's that there are two tiers here. There's the NFL administration, there's the NFL commissioner, you know, the bureaucracy of it all. And then at the end of the day, there are always these NFL players. And so as a viewer, you can be someone who is rooting for justice. Like, you want these players to get what they deserve for playing on the field. But it's hard because at the same time, they're still on the field. So how do you support them as players still fight for justice for them? And so, I mean, viewers are always going to have this issue so long as the NFL exists, because these players don't disappear just because they're facing injustice.
Yeah. And the other thing that strikes me, you know, we keep talking about these guys and, you know, the vision we have in our mind for those of us who watch them play is they're these big, strong athletes. When you look at how they are today, the description of Kevin Henry, a guy who's, you know, retired at the age of 33. He can't hold a job. He's got headaches, depression, memory loss, impaired cognitive ability. This is a young man, and those are things that normally you would talk about people who are far older than what his age is. And if you look at what's going on with Najee Davenport, you know, he's got memory loss, same thing, depression, can't perform basic household chores. And he retired even earlier. He was only 29 when he retired. I think that in order to get the average fan to realize what's going on, you got to put a face to the player. You got to actually, I know they don't want to come out, I know they don't want to be made an example of, but you know, it's one thing to look at some of the aging superstars who are, you know, in their 80s and you know, who they trot out and who are suffering from some of these same things. But I think if you would bring out somebody like Davenport or Hardy, who are much younger, and you show them that, look, it's not the old guys, it's these younger guys, maybe we get a little more empathy for these people.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You know, there's no wrong answer here. It's just more efficient, you know, of what we're doing as far as player goes. But I think also if the NFL needs an overhaul, a people-person overhaul. It's such a disconnect from the powers that be to the actual person and player, I think. I think when you look at leagues like the NBA, you look at a closer connect. You know, you look at a guy like a Mark Cuban who sees a ex-player like Deontay West, homeless, you know, on the side of the highway trying to get change. And social media, somebody takes a picture, put it out there, and he sees it. It goes viral, and he tracks him down and finds him and gives him an in-house job, you know, the stadium, and kind of set him back up. He's not giving him a handout, but he's putting him in a position to get off the street and do something for himself, productive. You know, that's the connection that's missing to me with the NFL. In the NFL, it's so far and few between. We're looking at a race battle right now, and at the same time, we're talking about this with the quarterbacks. The black quarterback is back in the news, upset, arguing like, you know, I'm trying to use my power to get fairness, and I'm feeling like I'm not getting fairness, so I'm speaking out. And we're not talking about the guy his first year. We're talking about Deshaun Watson. We're talking about Russell Wilson just coming out today. And with this quarterback plight and their aggressions of being angry against whatever their thing is, you don't see it from the white quarterback. The white quarterback is not joining this plight. This is a plight that seems to be narrowed in on, you know, the color of the quarterback. So the NFL, to me, has to reconnect, if ever connected, with the players as a whole. You can't just trample over the majority of what makes up your sport.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
Christina, we're going to give you the last word.
Yeah, I'll just say there's truly an irony in the fact that this lawsuit by Davenport and Henry is happening. You know, they launched the suit last year in the fall, and it's been ongoing, and it's sort of coming up into public perspective and scrutiny now. But it's also, that's also happening while the NFL is now proclaiming to care about racial justice and is inviting, you know, Amanda, the young black poet, to come speak at the NFL. And it's trying to say that it's adopted the values of this movement for justice, but at the same time, there's this ongoing suit about them applying this race norming strategy that discriminates against black players. So I think it's important to remember that sometimes things aren't as they seem, even as, you know, the messaging changes from the top, but is it really happening from the bottom up?
Sounds like you're asking them to put their money where their mouth is. Let's see if they listen. Thank you both for joining us. I really appreciated it. Thank you for listening to Huddling with the Pro Sports Talk with David Weinstein, featuring five-time Super Bowl champ Pepper Johnson. We're the podcast that tackles all the controversial hot-button issues from the world of sports. recognized by our guests and listeners for our hashtag no holds barred, good questions, and informed conversation. By day, I practice criminal defense law with Hinshaw & Culbertson in Miami, Florida. But once a week, you can find me here on HWTP Radio. The show is produced and edited by Jacqueline Park and is a Sweet G Communications production. Thanks to our guest this week, Christina St. Louis. You can find her at CN St. Louis on Twitter or at the Miami Herald online. And also to Talent Harris. You can find him on all the platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look for Talent Harris. Remember, you can find a new episode of Huddlin' with the Pro Sports Talk every Friday at hwtpradio.com. You can follow Pepper on social media at PepJ52. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at hwtpsportstalk. Missed a show? Visit our website at hwtpradio.com and download our podcast onto your smart device. So goodbye for now. We'll see you next week.